Ukraine assassinates a top Russian general.
Сегодня в результате теракта погиб наш коллега и наш товарищ.
We'll take a look at what, if anything, Ukraine stands to gain from this brazen killing.
This was a pretty big operation, pretty obviously very successful and a bit surprising, given that it's, you know, right there on the streets of Moscow, not that far away from the Kremlin itself.
Today is Tuesday, December 17th. And this is The Issue from VOA. Hi, everybody. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
Russia vows revenge following the assassination in Moscow Tuesday of one of its top generals, who Ukraine accused of authorizing the use of banned chemical weapons against its troops in the battlefield. Ukraine's security service has claimed responsibility for what's seen as the most high-profile killing of its kind. We hear details from Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones.
Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov, who was chief of Russia's nuclear, biological and chemical protection troops, was killed outside an apartment building when a bomb hidden in an electric scooter went off. That's according to Russia's investigative committee, which investigates serious crimes, adding that his assistant also died in the blast. A local resident was near the explosion.
At first we thought that cement might have been unloaded or something similar, but the blast was so loud that it did not seem like construction works. It was very scary.
Kirillov is the most senior Russian military officer to be assassinated inside Russia by Ukraine. Russia's state RIA news agency cited former president Dmitry Medvedev, saying Ukraine now faces imminent revenge. Investigators said they had opened a criminal case into the murder of two servicemen. Law enforcement sources told Russian media a terrorism case was likely to be opened.
The killing came on the same day that NATO members were meeting to affirm their commitment to step up support for Ukraine. After the meeting was over, UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer was questioned about Ukraine killing the Russian general.
Are you comfortable with the assassination, though?
Well, as I say, we must stand with Ukraine. I think that's a developing situation. But this morning's discussion was very clear about the strategic need for NATO to stand, as we do with Ukraine, in this critical period.
Ukraine's security service has recorded more than 4,800 occasions when Russia used chemical weapons on the battlefield since its full-scale invasion in February 2022.
In May, the U.S. State Department said it had recorded the use of chloropicrin against Ukrainian troops. That's a poison gas which was first used in World War I. Russia has denied using any chemical weapons in Ukraine.
And in a news conference on Monday, President-elect Donald Trump said Ukraine should be ready to make a deal to end the war.
Which is an interesting point, because the war could be, if President-elect Trump has his way, could be coming to an end. And to what end, really, the question is, I guess, did Ukraine attack this general, assassinate this general?
I wonder, though, as Ukraine is still a sovereign nation, that would be really up to Ukraine whether it decides to agree. It's not really, ultimately, would the U.S. be able to force Ukraine to make that call?
It's a really good question, because the United States is, I believe, the largest benefactor in terms of providing the material that needs to conduct the war.
Right.
Can Europe, I guess the real question is.
Right. Can Europe,
step up.
True. Can Europe step up what is needed to keep Ukraine continuing its efforts, because of all indications that the U.S. will not be giving it the kind of support that it has been having previously. But let's get some insights on this really significant assassination by Ukraine and what it all means for both sides. Joining us for analysis is Daniel L. Davis, a senior fellow and military expert at Defense Priorities.
So thanks so much for being able to take the time and talk to us about this.
You bet.
What do we know so far? What do we really know? And what is speculation?
What we've heard so far is that one of the unusual cases where someone is assassinated in Russia, in this case, and the Ukraine side doesn't deny it, or at least not through some channels. Usually, some of the times Ukraine has done some things. They've attacked certain long-range bases or whatever over the last year and a half, especially. They've been silent on it for some reason, as though they wanted to avoid repercussions or something. But everybody always knows, of course, where these things come from two warring sides. And this was a pretty big operation, pretty obviously very successful and a bit surprising, given that it's, you know, right there on the streets of Moscow, not that far away from the Kremlin itself. And you know that they have to be aware that there are security threats to a lot of the senior leaders in Russia. There's I believe it was a scientist that was assassinated not even a month ago, if I'm not mistaken, certainly recently. So all the warning signs should have been up there. And obviously, the terrorist attack from the Crocus City Hall a year and a half or so ago, they should be on the lookout for these kinds of things. And so it's a little surprising that it succeeded. But then you've got to really ask the question, towards what end? What is this supposed to accomplish? I mean, listen, bluntly stated, the war has been lost. Ukraine is not going to win. They are not going to hold on to much more territory than what they already have right now. They're not going to get any of the Donbas back. They're definitely not getting the Crimea back. Trump is unequivocal in saying he's going to enter office on the 20th of January. One of his priorities, the first priorities, is to seek a negotiated settlement to get the best deal he can for the Ukraine and the war over. Given those political, diplomatic, and military realities, I don't see the value in trying to potentially escalate this, because Russia seems unlikely to me that they're just going to sit on this and just take another one in the teeth, not do anything in response. I think that this is going to get some kind of a similar response from Russia, probably taking out some senior Ukrainian official in Kiev. They very often do a tit for tat kind of a situation. When they get hit one way, they hit back the same way. And we'll see if that pattern holds true or not. Putin does seem to have been somewhat muted, for example, in his response to the last two USA TACMs long-range missiles that were shot into Russia. He had conventional missiles after the last two, after the Oreshnik, after the first one, you recall. The second two were conventional waves of missiles and drones, which had substantial devastation effect on the Ukraine side, but was not anything over the top. He didn't go after any NATO bases. As far as we know, didn't go after NATO personnel inside Ukraine. And so he seems to be measured, because I think that, according to Trump anyway, the other day, he implied strongly that he's already in contact with Putin. So they're probably saying, look, just bide your time until January 20th, and then we're going to do a deal that's going to be in our mutual benefit. That's what it seems like, reading between the lines.
This was a pretty high-value target in Moscow. I would imagine, though, that on some level it must be somewhat humiliating for Putin and Russia.
Oh, well, yeah, without question, it is, which is why I say I doubt that they're going to just take this one in the teeth, because it is a high-profile situation. And even for the other high-profile targets in Moscow, they want to think that their government's going to protect them. Obviously, if this happened in the United States, I mean, we'd be looking for a pound of flesh for anything that happened. And while Russia – that's kind of where I was going with this. While Russia has been kind of muted in its responses to the previous long-range missiles, this one coming in your face into Moscow seems more likely that they're going to hit back in something significant. And Dmitry Medvedev today on the Russian media implied as much, where he said, you know, whoever's responsible for this, whoever actually did it on the ground is going to be caught, but we're also going to go after the patrons, whoever sent them. And he said, we know who that is. It's the senior leaders in Kiev. So he's signaled that is what they're going to do. We'll have to wait and see what turns out. But I imagine that they'll do something that's going to be commensurate against Ukraine with what they did.
The Ukrainian security service says that he was a valid target because he committed the war crimes, according to them, of using chemical weapons on the battlefield. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, they can say, the Ukraine side can say whatever they want. Obviously, everybody has a different interpretation, because if you read from the Russian officials, they're saying not only did he not do that, he actually exposed some potential chemical risk from the Ukrainian side, et cetera. And, obviously, I'm not in any position to know who's telling the truth or who's not. But if, you know, if we do actually facilitate and support an international rules-based orders, then the United States can't just be passive on this, because this violates everything. You let this kind of thing fly, then you literally do away with any kind of rules, and just whatever a side feels like doing, they can do, and then give it whatever justification that they want. And by any definition, this was an act of terrorism by Ukraine against Russia. Now, obviously, most in the West are for Russia, so they don't care. And I mean, just being blunt about it, they don't care about the rules. They're saying, yeah, well, they've been invaded, so they could do it. Meaning, yeah, you can violate the rules, and there are none in that case. And so I think that we have to be very careful in how we respond, that we don't just turn a blind eye, or we don't justify it, because it continues to erode our ability to hold anyone else accountable when they conduct, you know, violations of international law, et cetera. So it's not an easy issue for the United States, but I frankly doubt that they're going to do anything to Ukraine or make any public censure. We'll have to see.
And you mentioned, you know, the incoming Trump administration likely to work to has promised basically that he will work with Putin and he will end this war. A lot of people think that this would mean Ukraine basically giving up the territory that was taken from them. NATO allies met actually today to talk about stepping up their support for Ukraine, and noted that if that were to happen, in fact, by Ukraine giving up what was taken from them, would only serve to embolden Russia. And what does that look like for Europe and for the rest of the world?
Yeah, that presupposes that there's a choice to be made, that you can choose to give it up or choose not to, and you can't. Russia has militarily put itself in a position to retain control of what it has, and it doesn't matter what anybody in the European Union or Kiev have to say about it. Unless they're ready to go to war against Russia to change the outcome on the ground, this is highlighting one of the things I've been saying since the outset of this war almost 3 years ago. It's about men, not machines, not money. It doesn't matter how much stuff the West gives to Ukraine. They can absolutely give billions and billions more every single month, and it's not going to make any difference, because they don't have the manpower to be able to use it effectively. And by that, I mean, you can even lower the recruiting age to 18 and throw another 500,000 people into uniforms, but then you have an army of privates. You can't build a combat force just by putting a lot of people in uniforms. You have to develop it over time, and there are no shortcuts. In this war, it's already past tense. It can't be rebuilt or redone. The Russian side continues to expand its capability, and it does have the ability, because it has chosen to train a lot of these guys out of contact for upwards of a year in some cases, in some units. So there is nothing either diplomatically, industrially, or manpower-wise on the Russian side that would give any possibility to the Ukraine succeeding on the battlefield. That means that they are going to give up territory. Here's what I view as the decision and the issues facing the Western European countries and Kiev. If you keep going down a road that seeks a good outcome from your position, and you don't have a negotiated settlement on the terms that Putin listed on June 14th, and Peskov again about a week or so ago reiterated the same things, which is all four of the oblasts, to include the part Russia doesn't presently own, and the declaration of independence and no NATO in Ukraine. If you don't agree to that, then Russia will simply just keep fighting until they eventually grind the Ukraine army to nothing and probably end up with more territory than those four oblasts. That's the harsh reality facing Europe that they have not yet come to grips with.
You know, it just occurs to me, it might be a naive question, but why hasn't Ukraine attacked Moscow more if they can do this once?
Well, you mean in terms of an assassination?
No, I mean in terms of blowing up power plants or other targets.
Oh, they tried. I mean, they have tried a lot of that. And many, I mean, I think it was barely a month ago, all the headlines were largest drone strike by Ukraine to date in the war against Moscow. None of them hit. They were all shot down because Russia has pretty substantial air defense systems. Now, Russia is a big country, and some of these places, like in, I think, Oriel, also a week or so ago at a weapon or a fuel depot, one of them at least got through and caused a big fire. But those cause harm, but they don't. They're not going to change the tide of any in a strategic sense, because Russia is so vast it can absorb all of those. And if you need any proof about what would be required for Ukraine to have an effect strategically that would change the dynamics on the battlefield, just look at what Russia, according to the Wall Street Journal, a week or 10 days ago, Russia fired 6,000 missiles, rockets, and airstrikes in the 3 months prior. So what is it, September, October, November. 6,000, which was triple what they had done in just the previous 3 months, four times more than the previous year. And so they're expanding their capability. But just imagine all of those thousands of missiles. It harmed Ukraine, but it didn't knock them out of the war. Since Biden has lifted this moratorium on long-range missiles, you've had, what, 30 or 40 total have been fired, most of which have been either knocked down by electronic warfare or defeated with air defense weapons. So a few get through and they cause damage and they cause harm. But when thousands don't knock Ukraine out, a handful of dozens are certainly not going to cause any different difficulty to the Russians that they're not prepared to deal with. That is the reality.
Well, what about, say, this all does come to fruition, that, you know, there's a deal, they agree, okay, let's stop, you can have what you took. What's to stop Russia from giving the go-ahead to do more at some point with Ukraine or other neighbors?
Yeah, great question, because that comes up all the time. And there's so many people in the West that always, and I saw it just a couple of days ago, they wanted to fan the flames that Russia will be coming for them. And all I got to do is say, you take a look at the current battle lines, look where they have been over the last nearly 3 years now. And let's just take the last calendar year for this 24 month. You saw how many months it took for them to take Avdiivka. And then now in the months since to take Toretsk, and they're still not through with that one. They're trying to take Pokrovsk. It's been months. It took them a year and 8 months to take Vuhledar in the south. They still have not taken, after four full months, removed the Kursk incursion, etc. They are strapped, and they've already added 500,000 soldiers to what they had in 2022 when they launched the war, and you still see it takes that much time for them to take even a small amount. By what logic can anyone in the West claim that this army that is moving so slow on these small little towns and medium-sized villages are suddenly going to roll past the border? I mean, they can't even take the half of Ukraine to the Dnieper River, which many thought was going to be an earlier target, much less the whole of Ukraine, far less even than anything further. Russia doesn't have the capacity to do it. They also have not had the demonstrated intent or desire to do it. If anything, they may go as far as the Dnieper River, but they don't. I don't believe they even want to go beyond that, because now then you're talking about, you'd have to have a multi-million man occupation force, which would drain the life out of Russia. And Russia wants to build security on its border and have a buffer. The last thing it wants to do is absorb an occupation that it knows it's not going to succeed, that'll drain its coffers. So there is no practical, rational, or observable capacity for Russia to make good on that. That is important to understand.
Dan, thanks so much for the info.
You bet.
That was Daniel L. Davis, a senior fellow and military expert at Defense Priorities.
You know, Lori, Lieutenant Colonel Davis, retired, has a lot of experience on the battlefield as in the U.S. Military. And I've talked to him many times over the last 18 months, and he has held this opinion about the outcome of the war and has been correct along the way. And I think the important point that he makes is it's not how many weapons you give Ukraine. It's how many soldiers they can put on the front line to maintain a war, even if they get the missiles and the shells and the guns from Europe to continue fighting if the United States decides not to support them anymore.
Yeah, Russia seems to have a little more ability to pull in troops, as it has been doing, say, from North Korea, something that Ukraine is unlikely to be able to do or would do.
In the numbers that Russia's been
certainly,
into, yeah.
As supportive as their NATO and European allies and neighbors are, I don't think any of them have the appetite for.
Well, they're not going to
get tens
on the
battlefield.
Of thousands of troops. That's
no.
right.
It's a tough situation for Ukraine right now.
You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America.
On behalf of all of us here at VOA in Washington and around the world, thanks so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X, Blue Sky, and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, just go to our website, voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.